The New Yorker Radio Hour is supported by the Sympathizer podcast from HBO. From executive producers Park Chan-wook and Robert Downey Jr., The Sympathizer is the new HBO original limited series based on the Pulitzer Prize-winning novel of the same name. On The Sympathizer podcast, join host Philip Nguyen in conversation with the cast, crew, and author Viet Thanh Nguyen as they discuss the making of this historic series. Stream new episodes of HBO's The Sympathizer, Sundays exclusively on Max, and listen to The Sympathizer podcast wherever you listen to podcasts.
This episode is brought to you by Progressive. Are you driving your car or doing laundry right now? Podcasts go best when they're bundled with another activity. Like Progressive home and auto policies, they're best when they're bundled too. Having these two policies together makes insurance easier and could help you save. Customers who save by switching their home and car insurance to Progressive save nearly $800 on average. Quote a home and car bundle today at Progressive.com. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. National average 12-month savings of $793 by new customers surveyed who saved with Progressive between June 2021 and May 2022. Potential savings will vary.
Listener supported. WNYC Studios.
Welcome to the New Yorker Radio Hour. I'm David Remnick.
We did not go to Afghanistan to nation build. And it's the right and the responsibility of Afghan people alone to decide their future and how they want to run their country.
After nearly 20 years, American troops will be out of Afghanistan by September. That's according to President Biden. Officials at the Pentagon say that day may come even sooner than that. But in any case, the end of the forever war could well have terrible consequences. The return to power of the Taliban. Since April, when the pullout began, the Taliban has captured more than a quarter of Afghanistan's districts. And for anyone in the country who opposes their hardline theocratic rule, this is a terrifying prospect. Among many things, the Taliban is ideologically and unrelentingly opposed to the education of girls. Our staff writer, Sue Halpern, spoke recently with an Afghani educator, Shabana Basij Rasook. She's a founder of the only girls' boarding school in the country, the School of Leadership Afghanistan, and it's home to around 100 girls from all over the country. Shabana herself grew up under Taliban rule, and she's watching their advance very, very carefully.
What's it like in Kabul right now?
If you go around Kabul city, you could get a sense that things are in a way as usual. People are going to work, people are meeting in cafes, people are out and about. But then when you speak with people, there is definitely a great sense of concern for Afghanistan. Even though temporarily the heat is off of Kabul city, people are really worried about what's happening in the districts across Afghanistan. I had some remarkable conversations with different young women who told me that they are determined to go to work every day, but will also keep a more traditional outfit in their office just to be safe. I spoke with another woman who said, I see this coming. It's likely that Taliban could disrupt life temporarily here in Kabul, but we're not going to go back to that time. We're going to fight them. And these were just a few conversations I had today.
Wow. Are you noticing any difference between the fact that, you know, for years we've had the United States there as a presence and now they're not there? I mean, is that a palpable change?
Not so much physically, you don't see that, especially not in the city. You know, remember the major U.S. withdrawal happened back in 2014. But I think what is more obvious is, you know, believe it or not, people in Afghanistan are very, very glued into news from Washington, D.C. And that has a lot more impact on how people feel.
So, you know, the other day, Joe Biden gave a speech about Afghanistan, and he basically said, you know, it's not the responsibility of the United States to, you know, deal with the problems internally in Afghanistan, which includes, you know, not really caring or dealing with the fact that the Taliban will at least make a play to take over. So I'm imagining that people there were listening to that speech and wondering, you know, how do they interpret that?
For me personally, it is too soon to really thoughtfully reflect on any of this, but the immediate reactions that I hear around me are one of a sense of abandonment, but also a sense of frustration. How could President Biden, formerly in Congress, say when he voted to arm Mujahideen to fight the Soviet Union? And then you also hear young Afghans who are kind of reflecting on this more inwardly and saying, look at our own politicians. Why should we be expecting anything from the U.S. when our own politicians are mostly self-serving? So those are also very much conversations that people have, you know, looking inwards and expecting a greater a sense of responsibility from Afghan leadership.
Speaking of leadership, your school has the word leadership in it. Can you just describe this venture that you started when you were an undergraduate in the United States? You started a school for girls in Afghanistan while you were a student.
I had just finished my freshman year.
Seriously?
Yeah. I was at the end of my freshman year when I co-founded SOLA.
And what motivated you to do this and to take this on?
I think the shortest answer is that I was then and now and ever will be convinced that Afghanistan will experience a sustainable peace and development when a critical mass of women are educated. But we didn't start SOLA that way. Actually, when I co-founded SOLA back in 2008, the idea behind SOLA was to help young Afghan students get scholarship opportunities to the U.S. and other countries to access quality education outside of Afghanistan. But later on, I was really a lot more concerned about brain drain. A lot of Afghan students rightly didn't want to return to a country where the Taliban insurgency had found a renewed sense of hope, especially with the 2014 U.S. Troops withdrawal from Afghanistan. So instead of sending young Afghans outside of Afghanistan to access quality education, I wanted to bring quality education to Afghanistan, to young people. And only then I realized that I was setting up my country's first and unfortunately still only all-girls boarding school.
Why boarding school?
Oh, it's an amazing question and so important. If I may, do like a broad generalization for a moment about the experience of a young girl living in rural Afghanistan, wanting to go to school. She's lucky if she has her family's permission. That means her father's, her brother's, her grandfather, uncles, and often even male cousins if they live in an extended household. By the time she gets out of the house and before she gets to the closest school, it's very likely that she will experience some form of verbal harassment, reminding her that she should be at home and not out trying to get an education. And in some severe cases, girls have had acid thrown on their faces for wanting to go to school. Let's say she gets to school. It's likely that her school has received a threat letter from the Taliban or another insurgency threatening to burn down the school because it's educating girls. And as her school administration is dealing with that threat, deciding what to do with it, she's lucky if one of or two of her teachers show up to teach that day. It's also likely that she will get rushed to the nearest clinic, if there is one, and a bunch of her classmates because of some sort of poisoning. Another way girls' education is locally contested. And let's say she survives all of this and gets home safely. It's not like her family would want her to prioritize her studying or doing her homework, but rather she has to switch gears and start cooking and cleaning and taking care of younger siblings to prove that she continues to be worthy of being allowed to go to school. Now, mind you, this is a collection of hurdles and obstacles that rural girls face. But now imagine putting this very same girl in a boarding school. Take care of so many of those obstacles.
Talk about what it was like for you to get educated in Afghanistan. I mean, you grew up during the Taliban rule. So what was that like?
Education was illegal for girls 20 years ago and a little earlier than that. There were some very brave women and their families who decided to accept the risks to secretly educate girls. And I was one of those incredibly lucky girls to get educated under the Taliban regime at that time. You know, you may have heard of teachers being beheaded when they were discovered by the Taliban to be educating girls. And they were all true. And these brave women and their families knew that to be the risk. Our parents knew that to be the risk, but yet there was that commitment. So a couple of years after the Taliban regime, one of my older sisters, who was old enough that she was required to wear a burqa when she went outside, my father and my mother finally found a secret school that would educate her. And normally, secret schools wouldn't take the risk because a woman wearing a burqa going in and out of the house every day invited much, much more risk and attention in a way. She had to be accompanied by a male family member, so my parents dressed me up as a boy so that I could be her male family escort going to and from the secret school.
How dangerous was that for you? And did you?
Extremely. I remember this one time when my sister kept changing the streets we were walking more frequently than usual, and then finally just walking into a house that happened to have their garage door open and just closing the door. And I remember her shaking, and as I was asking her, why are we doing this? Why are we stopping here? She asked me to be quiet. And we stood there for at least 15, 20 minutes, and then we walked out. And then I remember her being at home and you know, crying and telling my family, my parents, all of this. And I remember asking my parents not to send us anymore. And
it's okay. How old were you?
I was young, probably 8, 9, and my father would, both of my parents, but I remember my father saying this to us quite repeatedly at that time, that everything we have could be taken away from us. But he would say that if there is one thing that no one, and I mean no one, can take away from us, that is our education, our ability to think for ourselves. 20 years ago, statistically, I didn't exist. there were zero female students in Afghanistan 20 years ago. But look at me today. I am not only a highly educated Afghan woman, I run a school where girls from 28 of the 34 provinces come to SOLA, most often because they don't have the opportunity to continue with their education where they live.
What happens if the Taliban actually does take over? What happens to SOLA? I mean, I'm assuming that you are thinking about this and having to deal
with this. Oh, I'm thinking about this every day. No doubt. I'm very well aware that, especially at this time, anyone could be listening to this, including Taliban. And, you know, here in Kabul, people say, yes, Taliban have changed. They have changed and they have grown more violent. Taliban claim the opposite, right? They say they have changed and they respect women's rights and girls' education. I hope they can prove it to us.
And are you afraid that the Taliban will take over? I mean, you indicated that you thought that people would resist. Is that really how you're feeling? Is that realistic?
You know, I wish I knew the answer. And there's a lot of uncertainty about the next few months, the next few weeks even. But there's one thing that is for sure. I cannot imagine Kabul being run by Taliban. A city that went from less than 500,000 people in 2000 to nearly 6 million plus people right now. And this comes from someone who lived under a Taliban regime in this very city. I was speaking with a young woman, and she said, yes, sure, the Taliban will kill more of us. The Taliban will kill a lot more of us, but they will never, ever rule over us.
Shabana Basij Rasuk is the co-founder of the School of Leadership Afghanistan, and she spoke with staff writer Sue Halpern.